Jack Rice is kind enough to join us. He's our international and legal expert. He's also available at jackricelaw.com. That's jackricelaw.com. He wanted to join us today, talk about a few issues. Hey, Jack.
It's great to be with you again, Matt. How are you?
Great to have you back. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing just great. Well, you know, like everybody else, we're trying to stay warm, and we just sort of muscle through it. That's what Minnesota does.
Indeed we do. Indeed we do. I want to talk to you about the legal ramifications and whether or not laws were broken or they're just massive loopholes in laws, as in regards to what happened out in Buffalo. A individual in town who clearly is not within their mental capacities. Not only does he get a gun, is he not put into an institution for his own safety, but he's allowed to get a gun permit as well. And of course, we know the rest of the story. A tragedy ensues. He goes into the Alana Clinic, kills one, shoots four other people, is under arrest, and is going to be charged. Talk a little bit about the legal ramifications here, because, I mean, obviously there was enough warning signs out there that this individual was probably not safe to be roaming around the community.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. I think about this as a former prosecutor, but as a criminal defense lawyer. You know, I've walked into courtrooms for decades, and I've had a lot of clients, some of whom have struggled with mental illness. And this is one of the issues that really does matter. If we look at who this man is, these aren't just sort of guesses. We can go back to a case in 2019 where he was charged with violating a restraining order tied to this place.
Yes.
And what happened was they ultimately dismissed that case because he was found mentally incompetent. Subsequent to the case being dismissed for being found mentally incompetent, he applied for a permit to actually go out and purchase a weapon. He did. He bought a weapon. He then went back there. He killed a woman. He injured four. This is tied directly to that. But here is the part that really makes it frustrating for, I think, for you, for a lot of us here in Minnesota and really across the country. If you look at what the Wright County Sheriff said when they asked him about this, and I quote, "If we are going to push blame, I would ask that people push blame where the blame is due. And that's on the suspect that decided to go into a Buffalo clinic to victimize people. They're truly trying to help their community, et cetera, et cetera." The problem is it ignores the fact that this is a mentally ill individual. And this man was given a permit. He went out and bought a gun legally based upon the fact that they gave him the permit. And then because he's mentally ill, they want to place the blame on him when we know that he's mentally ill. I don't know which part of this people can't seem to get.
Well,
it's incredibly frustrating.
And it does lead to imply, has the Wright County Sheriff given other people who are mentally compromised license for guns and just all, you know, is it a time bomb going off over there where you have a case where another person could be going out there and shooting? Because let's face it, as these conservative parts of the state go, the mentality is the gun is the most important thing. And you could tell by the way this whole thing unfolded, the story unfolded, they were far more concerned about making sure the how this guy got a gun was kept as quiet as possible until it had to be released. The reality is, I mean, are there any guarantees there aren't other people who are mentally compromised who aren't armed legally in Wright County right now?
No, and not just Wright County. And in fact, it brings up two thoughts in my mind on this one, Matt. The one part is this, it's the idea that you could have somebody who could get a hold of a weapon legally when there's no legal reason that they should actually have one. The idea that you're going to put the Second Amendment, just the desire that you want a weapon so bad that you're going to put that over the life of a mother to her two children. A dead mother to her two children. And you decided you're going to set a priority. You know which side of the fence you're on when it comes to this. That's the one side. But the other side is back to this Wright County Sheriff. It's the idea, this is what happens when you can't make the distinction between those people who are mentally ill and those who are not. And we've seen it happen so many times when what you do is you come at them with force too. And that's so many frequently, that's the problem as well. So what you end up with is this struggle where police are involved in situations where they shouldn't be. They should have people who are social workers and people with capability earlier on to address these issues, but they don't even make that distinction. So you have guys with guns who shouldn't have them, and you have police officers with no understanding or capability when it comes to the mentally ill are the ones who are the shock troops who are going in to deal with them too. It's the worst of both worlds. And I've seen it for decades when I walk into criminal courtrooms. It's so common that it's just horrifying.
In these conservative areas as well, one of the things which is troubling is that they believe the Second Amendment is the one thing over all. That you know, and so the question I have is, and I know you can't get in the mind, I'm asking a lawyer and a question I know you can't really answer, but let me just your speculation, pure speculation, hypothetical. Do you think that the Wright County Sheriff's learned his lesson and will maybe start evaluating who gets guns, or will they just keep going on as business as normal and not really caring, just saying we don't have any way to stop from giving these people guns because we don't want to find a reason to stop giving these people guns, hence they're going to just give more people guns?
Well, again, let's face it, if this were just a couple of people in Wright County, but let's go to Anoka, let's go up into Beltrami. Let's go up into Blue Earth. Let's go all other places around the state. And you know what? You can even add Minneapolis if you like. And so you look at Hennepin County. But the problem is that when you put the priority on the Second Amendment over the protection of the American people, of Minnesotans, this is what you end up with. And I think as importantly, this shows another need for transparency. This transparency that says, if you want something like this, we need to have oversight to make sure that you're not going to have, dare I say this, yahoos dropping permits on any and everybody because they've decided they want them, even if they don't have the capability to have them, or even the legal right to have them. In this particular case, the law is pretty clear. If you are found incompetent, you are not supposed to be issued a permit. That's what Minnesota says. So if you think about it, it's also about making sure we're not making mistakes. And his response is, oop, this was a mistake. No, that his response was, don't blame me, blame the mentally ill guy.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second.
And as a legal expert on this, I mean, the civil case against the county is going to be pretty strong. I mean, you, especially with that court ruling, as you said, you know, there's going to be a legitimate question of why in the world was this guy allowed to get a gun, which was then that was the gun that was used in the shooting. You know, they're going to have a pretty, I mean, on the civil trial, there's not going to be any kind of, you know, state or county charges there. But I mean, on a civil trial, there will be a case with teeth to basically go after the county, correct?
Yes.
All right.
There will be. Now, again, if there's something we don't know because it hasn't been out there yet. But what we have right now is one dead healthcare worker. We have four injured seriously. So that's what we know at this point. And with that in mind, if this in fact was what we think that it is, I think Wright County has some splaining to do. Mm-hmm.
Jack Rice, kind enough to join us. JackRiceLaw.net, .com, right? JackRiceLaw.com, right? That's the new one. You got a new site.
JackRiceLaw.com. Yeah, I have it all, whatever.
JackRiceLaw.com. That's where you need to go. Jack, let's turn to the impeachment. You know, once again, I've always found it interesting. The Republicans kept screaming it was unconstitutional to have the trial after the impeachment, after Trump was out of office. But yet never once did they take that unconstitutional claim to the SCOTUS to have the Supreme Court rule on it, because my gut feeling would have been that would have been almost an instantaneous 9-0 ruling. Oh, no, you of course can have the trial on him. The Republicans played the vague card. They just accused it of being unconstitutional without actually challenging it. Am I right on that?
You are. I mean, if we think about the craziness of what we have with the impeachment situation, when you had the Republicans in control of the Senate, what they did was they punted. They kicked this thing out saying, we're going to let time run out. Now, tell me this. Doesn't that mean if that's the logic, and let's just say we'll switch it over just for fun. Let's imagine it were a Democratic president who was doing something terrible, and we had the Democrats in control of the Senate for the entire 4 years. Could they not just simply decide, we do not have time to address the impeachment issue, so we're going to do nothing, no matter how horrible it is, and wait till they're out of office? Because if they lose and the Republicans take control, it's like, oh, sorry, that person's now out of office, so it doesn't matter what they did. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you think about the logic, the standard in the Constitution doesn't shift during your first, second, and third, or third and a half year, and all of a sudden in the last 6 months – it goes somewhere else. They have jurisdiction that lasts beyond the last day of a sitting president, because the issue isn't just about removing a president. It's about removing that person's ability to run for the presidency again. And that is exactly what's been articulated in the Constitution and applies to the issue of impeachment.
Okay, I want your evaluation of the Trump defense team, because it seemed to me there were two things that were going on. One, that Trump is literally so bad at paying lawyers that the only lawyers that would take the case are a billboard off the highway in South Carolina. And then the second thing was the fix. They knew the fix was in. They didn't have to present a case. They didn't have to make any sense. They could just babble on and scream whatever they wanted to, because they already knew that was this was a predetermined outcome. Am I correct on my evaluation of the defense team?
You nailed it.
Thank you, sir.
In fact, you're a genius. In fact, if you think of it this way, we'll just stop right there, right? If we start with the second one, I mean, you have to realize that what it's really about is this. This was never a trial. We keep hearing about a trial. There wasn't really a trial, because if you're going to have a real trial, what you need is you need an independent jury and you need an impartial jury. In this particular case, as an example, before the defense team actually put on their case, there were members of the jury that actually sat down with them to talk about what they were going to do. Now, let's imagine this for a second. As a criminal defense lawyer, right, I'm trying a murder case, and right before I get to put my case on, the prosecutors have already gone. And right before I put my case on, what I do is I kind of walk over to the jury box and, hey, you know, I'm going to go get some coffee and some mochas, and who wants a scone? You know, and it's like, why don't you come with me? We'll all go together, and what we'll do is we'll sit down over here at some coffee place, and we'll talk about what I'm going to do, and maybe you can even tell me what you think I should do better. Now, think about what that would be like. First of all, I'd lose my license and likely jury tampering, and I actually go to jail for that. Well, guess what? There were three members of the Senate who were jurors in this case who sat down with the defense team to do exactly that. Where's the independence? Where is the impartiality? Where is this idea that you're going to have a real trial? This was never a trial. This was a political showboat from the beginning to the end. So again, Matt McNeil is right.
Well, it's the way you described it, it's a Leslie Nielsen movie. It really is.
Well, yes. You know what? You realize that it almost doesn't matter what they say. I can tell you the opening from the prosecution, excuse me, from the defense team is maybe the worst thing I have ever seen anybody. And I will include some of my early trials when I first started. And I'm thinking, wow, I think I actually nailed it compared to that. And that says something, because
very, very Barry Zuckerkorn from Arrested Development. Wow, those guys are great over there. I wish that was my legal team. Like, what are you saying?
That's exactly it. And in the end, you know what? The thing is when you realize that the guys who you're having with are going to be making decisions, it doesn't matter what you say.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you say.
What are the avenues? I mean, are there avenues for Trump to be held accountable in the courts after this now?
Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, that's the interesting part is, in fact, there are potential areas for a whole series of them, and let alone all of the civil lawsuits that could come out of this. Every single person who was in has the ability to sue him as a result of that. But let's go to the big ones, because if we think about where he is right now and where he should be afraid is when it comes to the question of tax fraud, because this is exactly what New York and both Washington, D.C., but New York in particular, they have been going after the president since before he was the president. And very simply, this is what he did. What he did and what they're looking at is he would get loans from the likes of Deutsche Bank and others. And he would say, I have a piece of property. This property is worth $1 million. And then what he would do is he would then go to the state of New York and say, I need to pay taxes on my property. My property is only worth $300,000. Well, the problem is the gulf between what he says it's worth to the state is and the gulf between what he says to the people he's borrowing money from That gulf is fraud. That's the difference. You can't say it's worth one thing to one person and a different thing to another because you don't want to pay taxes on it. So the problem that, of course, that he has is that they have the bank documents. Oh, and they also have his tax documents, and he can't stop New York from having the documents that they already have. But he's out of office. What you may very well see, and this is probably coming, is you're going to see indictments that are coming down on this president as a former president because he was a private citizen when he actually committed these acts. That's what he should be afraid of.
Will you, do you think he'll be in the country in a year, or do you think he'll be out of the country?
I just assumed he'd actually move to Russia. Where else would he go?
No one else wants him, that's for sure. I wouldn't be surprised. I really wouldn't be surprised if we had a former president living in a foreign country for the rest of his life. So, Jack, as always, just top-notch. JackRiceLaw.com, JackRiceLaw.com. Spotlight this as well. Jack, your legal insight is always appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care. Have a good day.